Welcome to part two of a three-part series on parathyroids. Featuring one of the world's most accomplished and respected parathyroid surgeons, Dr. Douglas Politz of Tampa General Hospital. And in this episode, we're going to discuss parathyroid disease, who has it, and who needs an expert. I'm Scott Webb, and welcome to MDCast by Tampa General Hospital, a go-to listening location for specialized physician-to-physician content and a valuable learning tool for world-class healthcare. So, Doctor, it's so great to have you back on. In the last podcast, you talked about fake news, misconceptions, things like that. And as we roll on here with our series on parathyroid disease, you know, this time we're going to talk about who has it, who needs an expert, and maybe just a good baseline here to get rolling. How common is parathyroid disease?
I think I mentioned this in the first podcast. Most people know somebody with thyroid disease. They've had Aunt Tilly, they've had, you know, a grandma, they've had a neighbor, they've had somebody in their lives, or they themselves have had a thyroid problem, but they don't know about parathyroid. And so it's a little more common than you would imagine. It's about 1 in 80 people in the United States in their lifetime are going to get this disease. Now, that's over the course of a lifetime, okay? There are about 100,000 new cases per year in the United States. And where it really, really dials up the incidence is in women that are over 50. About 1 in 50 women over 50 will get diagnosed with this. It's about 3 times more common in women than it is men, and we don't know why that is.
Yeah.
It just is.
It just is. So let's get into this, and let's dig in, let's roll up our sleeves here. Who has this disease besides just women over the age of 50? And more importantly, I think, how would I know, or how would a listener know if they had it?
It can happen in any age. I've actually been part of operations on a baby with this, a 104-year-old with this. It can happen at any age. But how do you find out? I will tell you, the most common way people find out they have this is that their blood calcium level came back high. Okay, we went into this a little bit on the fake news podcast of how the machines changed in the 50s. And we started getting this multiphasic screening chemistry analyzer, this fancy machine that now spits out your sodium, potassium, calcium, all these different blood tests, all these different measurements from your bloodstream. Well, those come back high, and that's how a lot of people get diagnosed with it. But they often have gone to their doctor because they don't feel well. They're tired. They're forgetful. They're achy. They're crabby. They don't sleep well. They're depressed. All these kinds of things that you just figure, okay, I'm not 19 anymore. All right, fine. Okay. But yeah, you're not 19 anymore, but you're also not supposed to have a calcium level that's too high. Now, that's where we can really get into the meat of this. Who has the disease? Somebody that has calcium levels that are consistently above 10 in an adult. Okay. Who do I mean? Not kids, not teenagers, not 20 somethings. Okay. You're still building bones in that part of your life. Okay. You're going to have calcium levels that are up above 10, and that's still normal. The decade of the 30s, once you get to your peak bone density about age 30, then, well, everything goes downhill after that, doesn't it? But anyway.
Yeah, I'm 53. I would concur, doctor. Everything went downhill.
Then,
yeah.
You get to 30, and then your calcium should start drifting down and find its home down in the nines, okay? And so it makes it a little easier to diagnose this once you get to patients that are 40-plus years old. If those people come back and their calcium levels are 10.6, 10.3, 10.4. Well, that's not supposed to be like that. Remember, they should have transitioned to the nines. And so that's kind of your best clue, is just kind of pick up that lab report and see, do you have a calcium level that's up above 10? It may even still be in the lab's normal range, but it's not normal for someone that's that age to have a 10.4, a 10.8, a 10.6, even if the lab is still calling that normal. If it stays up like that, that's not supposed to be that way. And so that's your first clue. Then if it's high, then what'll happen is you'll get a parathyroid hormone level to go along with it. And that's what these little parathyroid glands make. If you have a parathyroid hormone level that's either normal or high, along with that high calcium level, now we're getting a very high index suspicion that this is what's wrong with you.
Yeah, and I think you're so right. I think we all get to an age, whether it's 30 or hopefully older, where we just sort of chalk things up. Well, I'm 30. Well, I'm 50, you know. And as you say, yeah, there is some things that happen to us as we age, but some of these things are just not normal. So if we don't feel well, we should tell our primary care providers. We should be tested for things like this. And if we're over 10, you know, that's the indication, right?
Absolutely. That's where you really ought to say, okay, this is something I need to look into. Now, it may prove that you may look and say, oh, well, gosh, I've been on you know, industrial strength vitamin D doses. And that's what's driving my calcium up. But in other words, it requires peeling back that first layer of the onion and looking into this a little further. Now, there are some symptoms that are much more concrete than what I was just describing. There are things that are known: kidney stones, osteoporosis, decreasing kidney function. I mean, those are some of the things that are measurable, that are tangible, that a person with parathyroid disease will have. But quite honestly, that's the minority of people. Only about 22-23% of people ever get a kidney stone from this. Fewer still ever get to the stage of osteoporosis. But most of the patients will have something that I just mentioned. God, I just don't feel right. I'm tired of being tired. I have brain fog. You hear that one all the time. My brain, I feel like I'm not sharp like I used to be. Is this normal? I mean, and you look and their calcium's 10.9, you say, well, no, that's not normal. Let's look into this a little further.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it always comes back to just, you know, all of us just listening to our bodies. You know, when we know something's not right, that's a good time, even during COVID, put on a mask and go do something about it. And I apologize to other providers who probably know the answer to this question, but when I hear parathyroid disease, I think thyroid, right? Because it has the word in it. So is parathyroid disease related to the thyroid gland?
No. Parathyroid glands, there are four of them, and they live in the neck, and they are behind, around the thyroid gland. So as I often say to patients, I'll say, you know, they are neighbors, but they're not cousins. They live next to each other, but they are in no way related. I guess the closest relation they ever get is just in their proximity to each other. And even on rare occasions, a parathyroid gland can actually be hidden inside the thyroid gland.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting little Easter egg. I never heard that before. That's really interesting. And again, you know, pardon my ignorance, but that's why we have experts like yourself on. You know, when I think of parathyroid tumors, well, I hear the word tumor and I think cancer. It must be cancerous. Is that true?
Almost never. It's rarer than hen's teeth for these to be cancer. I mean, yes, is there such a thing as parathyroid cancer? But it is so uncommon. By and large, these are benign tumors. What they do to you isn't so benign. I mean, you start losing kidney function and get osteoporosis and break your hip and you pass a kidney stone, you have all these other things wrong with you. Well, it starts to feel like that benign tumor is producing a malignant disease. Yes, but these are not, as we think of in medicine, they're not going to break off and spread to your liver or your brain or your lungs or something like that. In that way, these are not cancer. I have in over 8,500 parathyroid operations in my career, I've seen 2 parathyroid cancers. So, you know, whatever that math is, it's a tiny fraction of.
Yeah, I was never good at math, but that's a very small number to be sure. 2 out of 8,500 plus. Yeah, I like those odds.
It's virtually almost never cancer.
Yeah, this is really interesting, and I guess it makes me wonder, okay, so if I needed to have surgery, should I just look up my local surgeon to take care of this, or should I really invest the time, research, and then travel to an expert center?
This is such a good question. And honestly, it's going to be a different answer for just about everyone. But not everybody has the ability to. I mean, first of all, there's somebody in every town who's an expert at hernia surgery, gallbladder surgery, cataract surgery, hearts. There's somebody in every town in America that's an expert. It's really hard in a disease that's not necessarily that common to get so much experience to the point that you're at the expert level, like with parathyroid disease. So my partner, Dr. Jose Lopez, and I, we are in a unique situation where we are the two most experienced parathyroid surgeons that are operating in the world today. And so we can't operate on everybody with this disease, okay? Everybody can't fly to Tampa to have us operate on them. And so even if they could, from one part of their life, maybe they don't have anyone that can look after the ranch or the kids or the pets or the cattle or whatever it is. And so they need to find someone in closer proximity to them. And for most of the cases with this, okay, if you get a scan, there are nuclear scans, sestamibi scans is what all our physician colleagues listening to this, they'll understand that term. A sestamibi scan can locate about half of these. If a patient has this disease, they can't get to an expert center. That's just not practical. And they have actually a parathyroid tumor that actually shows up on the scan, then yes, you can have your local surgeon. There are any number of ENT surgeons or general surgeons in your local area that could go take that one out and be done. But we'll move on to this when we get to failed surgery in our next podcast. But if you just stick to that, I think that that's going to fix about 70 to 75% of patients, just taking one of these out, because one of the four is the problem in about 70 to 75% of these. Just one out of the four. And then about another 20% have two of these that are bad. So you're going to fix 70% of patients, 75% of patients by just taking that one out. And a lot of surgeons can do that at home. I just would caution surgeons that don't have a ton of experience at doing this. Don't go looking for all the other parathyroid glands. If you've got one on the scan, you don't have a whole lot of experience doing this, just go take that one out. If that didn't fix the problem, fine. Now, at that point, we can talk about having to go to an expert, okay? I often tell patients this as well, Scott, that I've been made fun of before for this, is I tell patients, everybody doesn't need us. You know, most people that have this disease have one parathyroid tumor out of the four. And so if it shows up on a scan, well, then there's probably a surgeon somewhere within driving distance that they can get to that can take that out successfully. But there are enough unusual oddball findings, like I was telling you earlier, where the parathyroid gland becomes a tumor and it's hidden inside the thyroid gland. That's a tough problem for someone who doesn't do this all the time to recognize and fix. Sometimes these things get hung up when you're developing in your mother. They get hung up in front of the carotid artery up around your jaw. And it never make it down to under your Adam's apple where you're expecting this to be. And that's a special circumstance that if you don't recognize it and have experience with it, you don't know how to fix that problem or know that it even exists. Some of them continue to move downward during your development and end up down just above your heart. And so if you don't recognize that that's what's going on, then quite honestly, if the problem's down by your heart, you could spend 8 hours operating in the neck. It's going to be a swing and a miss because that's not where the tumor is. So as I say to people, everybody doesn't need an expert, but when you do, you sure would like to have it, have that expert right there operating on you at the time so you don't have to go and have surgery again.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'm just taking some mental notes here. So it's usually one of the four, and if a local surgeon can find the one, you know, consider that a win. Everybody high five. That's probably going to do the trick. It's going to fix most people. But for those more complicated cases or when they can't find any of the four, because as you say, they're just not where they're supposed to be, great to have an expert like yourself who's done 8,500 plus of these. But let's just say, even with you as an option, someone chooses not to have surgery. They should have it, but they don't. What do we do then? What do we tell those folks? Is it possible to just sort of behavior, lifestyle modification and live with this?
I would say one other thing on the question we just finished. If you have the means, you have the ability, you have the choreography in your life where you can have someone stay with the kids or you can have someone look after the home front, I mean, then yes, you want to go to someone who has the most experience at it, certainly. But we talked about...
I want to go to Tampa either way, but you know, if I can kill two birds, if I can go to Tampa, Busch Gardens, and also see you, then that's pretty good.
I just had a lady last week come here from Norway, and she was happy to escape the snow. With all the COVID restrictions, they're not doing any scheduled operations, she said, perhaps for another year, because they're so backed up from all the COVID restrictions, that she said, I can't wait that long. She was miserable. But anyway, can you live with it? Like we said earlier, during the interim, a piece is not going to break off and spread to your brain or your liver or somewhere else. That's not what's going to happen to you. The disease accumulates over time. And I say this expression every day. It's the time, not the climb. The complications of the disease are what accumulate over time. The calcium level doesn't necessarily just keep going up and up and up. It just sort of stays 10.6, 10.8, 10.4, 10.5 in most of the people with this. So if you're not having kidney stones, if you don't have osteoporosis yet, if your kidney function is still normal, if your cardiovascular health is good, and you don't have some astronomically high calcium level, yes, you can in fact say, okay, you know what? This isn't a great time in my life to deal with this. I have XYZ coming up, my daughter's getting married in 2 months, whatever it is. Okay, you could put this off. You just have to recognize that there could come a day where you are miserable, or maybe your calcium does start to climb, or you're in an ER with a big kidney stone. And from what I hear, it's not habit forming to pass a kidney stone. Nobody gets addicted to that.
No, no, right? You don't hear a lot of good reports. So that was a great kidney stone to pass. No.
Right, exactly.
My favorite of all the kidney stones. That was a good one. No.
Yes. Or you break your hip. from osteoporosis. And that's no fun either. So yeah, as long as you understand that could be what is your destiny, Luke, you know, that could be what is down the line for you. And you're willing to say, you know what, as of now, I'm going to sit tight with this. I can't go get this fixed right now. I'm going to have to live with it. Okay. You know, just as long as patients are informed.
Yeah, that's key. And that's why we do things like this, both for other providers and patients, you know, prospective patients who may listen. It sounds like you're saying eventually you can put this off for a bit, whether it's the wedding or the cows or whatever, you know, but eventually that bill's going to come due, whether it's kidney stones or, you know, broken hip or so on. So really interesting stuff today. Very educational. I'm going to talk to you soon as we continue on this series. So doctor, thanks so much. You stay well.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Scott. Very much fun. I enjoyed this.
That's one of the world's most accomplished and respected parathyroid surgeons, Dr. Douglas Politz of Tampa General Hospital. And thank you for listening to MDCast by Tampa General Hospital, which is available on all major streaming services for free. To collect your CME, please click on the link in the description. For other CME opportunities, including live webinars, on-demand videos, and local events offered to you by Tampa General Hospital, please visit cme.tgh.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Scott Webb. Stay well.